Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films El Conde, American, An Odyssey to 1947, and Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose.
The three films that I want to talk about today are really different from each other, as often happens. And the first one is different from almost anything. It's called El Conde, which simply means The Count. And it is a movie from Chile directed by the very great Chilean filmmaker Pablo Larraín. And his past couple of films have dealt with very real people. This one deals with a real person, too. He made a movie called Spencer just a couple of years ago about Princess Diana, and a movie called Jackie before that. So he's made movies about real, very famous people. Years ago, he made a very good movie called No, which dealt with Chilean politics. Now, in El Conde, he is dealing again with a real person, but the person is portrayed in a very unusual way. The person is General Augusto Pinochet, one of the most notorious evil people, in my opinion, and in a lot of people's opinions, of the 20th century. He is the person who presided over the country of Chile as its ruler, as its dictator, as its leader, in just horrific ways. He took over after a coup against the previous Marxist president, Salvador Allende. And once Pinochet was in power, he just, all kinds of horrific things transpired. So why would Pablo Larraín make a movie about Pinochet? Well, the idea here is not to make a realistic movie, but it is to make a movie that explores and exposes and exaggerates Pinochet's evil, if that's possible, by literally making him into a vampire. So this is a vampire movie. It is a horror movie. And we have here Pinochet as a vampire. And at the very beginning of the movie, we find out about his past before he was in Chile. He was in other countries, and he was doing pretty awful things there, too. But he became a vampire, and he is now in Chile. And the thing is that he is now an old man or an old vampire, and he's kind of decided that he's had enough. He would rather like to die. The thing is that vampires can't die. As long as they keep drinking blood, they stay alive, and he can't seem to stop himself from drinking blood, so he still does that. So he goes out, and he is on the hunt. And that means he has to find victims. And what he does is, it's not so much the traditional Bela Lugosi-style Dracula drinking blood out of the jugular vein of a victim. He cuts out the heart of the victim and then takes it back to his kitchen and runs it through a blender. And we see him doing this frequently during the film, and it's sort of like he's making a smoothie. And so he makes it in his blender, and then he drinks it down. And, of course, all this is done in a very fantastical way. This is a horror movie, but it's not the most horrifying kind of horror movie, because it's not really all that realistic. In the meanwhile, a young nun comes into his life. She's there to help organize the family's affairs. And his children, his grown children, are very unhappy with him. They're afraid that him being back on the hunt again and going out and cutting out hearts is going to call undue attention to the family again, and that nothing good is going to come of this. And so there are all kinds of family fights and squabbles and quarrels that go on during the film. And that's a good source of humor within the movie, which, by the way, is often a very funny movie. So that is what El Conde is about. The Conde is, the Count is a vampire, and it is also Augusto Pinochet, and he is even more evil here than he was in real life, but not much, because he was so incredibly evil in real life in all kinds of ways. So one of the greatest things about El Conde, well, first of all, it's beautifully acted, and secondly, it is the very definition of pitch dark humor. The humor is there. It's a funny movie, but oh my gosh, the humor is also just so ghastly in a whole lot of ways. And that I found refreshing. It's not often you see that kind of thing, the really, really darkest possible humor pulled off so well. But also, it is a gorgeously photographed movie. It is photographed by the American cinematographer Ed Lachman, a very gifted person who has been around for decades and has photographed all kinds of wonderful movies. And he is at his total best in this film. This film is mostly in black and white, has a little bit of color in it, but Edward Lachman just does beautifully with all of the modes of cinematography in the film, and it's a gorgeous looking movie. So, if you like horror movies, if you like darker than dark comedies, if you like movies that just look absolutely superb in every possible way, even though they're showing the most ghastly possible things, then El Conde is definitely a movie to check out. It is streaming on Netflix, so it's easy to find, and I just had a good time watching it. I really think it's one of the best movies to come out so far this year. It's a political movie. It's a horror movie. It's a comedy. It's all kinds of things at once, and I think it handles all of these different modes and varieties of cinema just beautifully. So I highly recommend El Conde if it sounds like the sort of thing that you can take, because again, it certainly does have its ghastly moments, but at least they're in black and white. Next movie I'd like to talk about is a documentary, and when you actually look at the movie, the title is just American, but the fuller title of it is American, An Odyssey to 1947, and this is a movie that kind of revolves around the very, very, very great American filmmaker Orson Welles, who of course spent a good deal of his career in Europe because he was basically blacklisted by Hollywood during the great anti-communist witch hunts that started up in the late 1940s. But anyway, it revolves around Orson Welles, but it's not exactly a documentary about Orson Welles. And again, the subtitle is An Odyssey to 1947. Now, Welles' career started in earnest in 1941. Before that, he was a hugely famous radio entertainer, and he was hugely important in the American theater. But in 1941, he went to RKO Pictures in Hollywood, and he directed and co-wrote and starred in Citizen Kane, regarded by many people as perhaps the greatest movie ever made. And it certainly is, in my opinion, one of the greatest movies ever made. So that's what Orson Welles did in 1941. And it started his career, he was still in his mid-20s, started his career with an astonishing bang. After that, however, things immediately started to turn bad for him. He directed another film, which is still an incredibly great film, The Magnificent Ambersons, but the studio mutilated it, cut it to ribbons, threw out almost an hour's worth of the footage, and then released it, and of course it was a flop. And that got Orson Welles' reputation started as somebody who couldn't be relied on to make good, profitable movies. He went on and he made quite a number of more movies in America, but then again, all the anti-communist witch hunts started up, and he migrated to Europe. He still did some work in America. He made a very great film in the middle 50s, for example, called Touch of Evil in America, but a lot of his career after that was spent in Europe. So that is some of what American, An Odyssey to 1947 deals with, but it only deals, again, with the 1947 phase, the very early phase of Orson Welles' career, when he started with such a superb triumph with Citizen Kane, and then immediately started to have all kinds of professional troubles with the film industry. But the movie also deals with two other people, very importantly. One of them is a Japanese-American man named Howard Kakita, and we find out about him because he was a little boy, 6 years old, when America dropped the atomic bomb over Hiroshima, where he was. And of course, a second bomb was also dropped on Nagasaki, and that helped to mark the end of World War II. So Howard Kakita was in Hiroshima when the bomb was dropped. He later on ended up emigrating to the United States, and there was a bit of back and forth because of his parents and his grandmother and so forth. But he ended up then living in one of the Japanese, what they called internment camps, but they were really concentration camps, where so many West Coast Japanese Americans were forced to live during the Great Panic over possible Japanese subversion in America during World War II. So that is a second thread that runs through this movie, American, An Odyssey to 1947. And then the third thread deals with an African-American man named Isaac Woodard, who enlisted in the Army, served with distinction in the Army, but then underwent a horrible racist attack that left him blind. And the movie also tells about his life and career. So we are oscillating among these three things in this movie, American, An Odyssey to 1947, which, by the way, was directed by Danny Wu, a Canadian Chinese filmmaker. The movie oscillates between these three stories, or among these three stories, the story of Orson Welles in his early career, the story of Howard Kakita and his surviving the atomic bomb in Hiroshima, emigrating to America, and then the story of Isaac Woodard, who underwent a horrible racist attack and was blinded. Now, all three of these stories are not equally related. For example, there's very little indication of what in the world Howard Kakita's story, as dramatic as it is, has to do with Orson Welles. So that seems sort of tacked on in a way, although it's an affecting story within the movie. Isaac Woodard, on the other hand, after he went through that horrific racist attack which left him permanently blinded, Orson Welles, who was very involved in politics, did a whole series of radio broadcasts seeking support and exoneration, some sort of redress for the horrible evils that Isaac Woodard had suffered. So he was very much involved in Orson Welles' career during that time. And that is a useful illustration of what a political person Orson Welles was, and how in addition to his filmmaking activity, he was very actively involved in politics and regarded politics as one of the most important components of his own experience. That said, I personally, as somebody who loves movies and who loves Orson Welles' work, I was fascinated by American and Odyssey to 1947. It is a bit scattershot, but anybody interested in film should certainly look at it, and anybody interested in American history of the mid-20th century should look at it, because these three stories, even the one about the Japanese man, which is not really integrated into the film as a whole, each one illustrates important things about American culture, American society, and American politics around the middle of the 20th century, which is not that long ago, and anybody interested in any of those topics should definitely check it out. It's a very well-made and, I found, completely absorbing documentary. And our final film today has the very unlikely title of Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose. This is one of the rare Talking Mongoose that I have talked about on our show over the years, one of the rare Talking Mongoose films. So it is actually based on something that really happened, although the movie is basically pretty much a fantasy. Nandor Fodor was a real person. He was a Hungarian-American researcher who was very interested in the paranormal, in trying to find out if there is such a thing as supernatural experience in the real world. That's what he did. That's what his research centered on. So he got wind of this family in England which claimed to have a talking mongoose living at their farm out in the English countryside. So he decides to go there and investigates, and he takes along with him his young assistant. So there they are, visiting this family. The thing is that this talking mongoose, whose name, by the way, is Jeff, spelled G-E-F, is very elusive and doesn't particularly like to show himself. And so they have to sort of snoop around a lot and look for him in his favorite haunts. Maybe he's in the room in the house where they have a little corner for him. Or maybe he's in this cave off on the moor where he sometimes spends his time and steals things from the house and secretes them there. Or maybe he's in town. They keep looking for him. And every once in a while, Nandor Fodor hears Jeff's voice and starts to think maybe this is real. On the other hand, maybe it's all a total hoax. So that's what the movie is about. And it turns out that lots and lots of people in the town, in the neighborhood, certainly in the household, totally believe in Jeff, believe that he is real, that he really talks, that he really speaks like a human being, and that he just is shy, and that's why you don't see him very often. One person who doesn't believe all this is the servant of the family, who is a black man, who is very level-headed and very sensible, and he believes the whole thing is totally ridiculous. And poor Nandor Fodor, who wants to find out if there is such a thing as the supernatural, as the paranormal, and who is himself, by the way, very much a skeptic, but would like to find something that maybe proved his skepticism wrong, he is caught in the middle of all this, trying so hard to figure out whether this is real, whether it's a hoax, whether it's some sort of mass delusion that has taken over the members of his family and a lot of the people in the neighborhood. Anyway, he's trying to figure that out, and that is what the movie is about. The movie was written and directed by Adam Siegel, and it's a beautifully acted movie. Simon Pegg is just excellent as Nandor Fodor. He gives him a slight Hungarian accent, not too much, just gives us that flavor of the guy who is a little bit out of his element and trying so hard to figure something out. Minnie Driver is superb as Anne, his assistant, who travels with him. Christopher Lloyd only appears in the very beginning of the movie as another researcher, but he is just excellent during his parts of it. I also want to mention Tim Downey, who plays the owner of the house where Jeff supposedly and perhaps actually resides. All of the acting in the movie is simply simply wonderful. I also want to mention Gary Beadle as Errol, the very, very suspicious servant in this household. So it's a strange movie. It's a beautifully photographed movie. I found it beautiful to look at. Interestingly, the voice of Jeff is supplied by a very well-known writer who some people may see the movie simply because Neil Gaiman is in it. He only provides the voice of Jeff, but it's sort of fun to hear his voice, and the whole movie is fun. It starts out with sort of a nonsensical little thing, little sort of a pseudo-documentary about talking animals, but once it settles into its real subject matter, it's whimsical, it's funny, it's based on reality, and it's beautifully acted, and it's just gorgeous to look at. So I had a good time looking at Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose. Based on real things, the movie doesn't really come down clearly on whether it believes in Jeff or not. I ended up believing in the movie, if not in Jeff. It's a fun movie, Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose. If you want to see something really out of the ordinary, you might look at this one. So that is my talking non-mongoose story this week.
For which we thank you, as always and ever, plus the mongoose, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films El Conde, American, An Odyssey to 1947, and Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.